Carnival Corp wants to call on Cuba. Hello and welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. The world's largest cruise ship operator wants to set sail for Cuba. Carnival hopes to offer a social impact cruise from Miami by next spring, but the company still needs to get approval from Cuban authorities. Donald Trump's comments about Mexican immigrants continues echoing in South Florida as many organizations and government officials distance themselves from the Donald. So what does this region's response say about our relationship with immigration? Speaking of politics, the Florida Supreme Court wants the state's political landscape redrawn. It orders a new congressional district map affecting at least five districts here in South Florida. Plus, Uber and now Lyft will say goodbye to Broward County. It's all ahead on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. In the coming weeks, that's when the world's largest cruise ship operator expects to get the go-ahead from Cuba to travel there. Carnival Corp's newest global cruise brand called Fathom announced this week it got the American okay to do so. If Cuba clears Carnival for the visits, the company would become the first U.S. cruise operator to dock in Cuba in more than 50 years. Tara Russell is the president of the Fathom brand.
It's important to note that, you know, the Cuban officials and authorities still have to approve everything that we've lined out. And so we don't want to be presumptuous. It's really important to us that we respect and understand their desires. And of course, we're going to comply with their needs and make this happen.
The Fathom brand focuses on social impact travel, providing volunteer opportunities for passengers. Now, in order to comply with the U.S. restrictions on traveling to Cuba, Fathom's plan is to have a series of cultural, artistic, and humanitarian exchanges during what it hopes to be a three-port, week-long trip to Cuba on a 710-passenger vessel it wants to begin in May of 2016. Here's Carnival President and CEO Arnold Donald.
We'll learn a lot more about the ports. We'll be working with the Cuban players there in the country to make certain that as things evolve, the ports will have an opportunity to input and help contribute to what they want to build for their nation.
Now, Carnival is not commenting publicly if it expects to have to invest itself in Cuba to meet its goals there. Again, Fathom brand president Tara Russell.
We don't know yet what investment potential is necessary to both get this going and obviously long-term corporately. We see a lot of potential for
the island. Are you prepared to make a capital investment?
I think it's too soon to say. We're going to understand from the Cuban side what it is that they want to see to comply with their expectations and regulations to make this happen, and we're going to be open-minded about the possibilities, and we're confident we're going to get to a solution together.
Now, the latest economic effort here comes less than 2 weeks before the scheduled opening of embassies in Havana and Washington, marking the formal reopening of diplomatic relations between the two countries. So how about it? Do you support Carnival's Cuban's efforts here? Would you take a social impact cruise to Cuba? And how does the evolving relationship between the U.S. and Cuba affect the rest of the Caribbean tourism industry? Join the conversation here on the Florida Roundup today, 800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. You can tweet us at WLRN and find us on Facebook.com/WLRN Media. Tim Padgett covers the Americas for us here at WLRN. Mimi Whitefield doing much the same for our partner, the Miami Herald. Welcome back, both of you, here to the Florida Roundup. Tim, first of all, any idea on how Carnival is going to be greeted in Havana Harbor if it's able to dock there?
Well, we don't right now. Infrastructurally, I don't know if that's all that possible. I mean, Mariel, for example, that's a harbor where you're seeing a lot of infrastructural improvement. But Havana Harbor, for example, is not a place yet that's really ready to accommodate that kind of that kind of cruise influx. But on another level, on a less physical level, I think Cuba and the Cuban government are sort of wary about this, because on the one hand, it's really all it is just taking what's been coming in terms of U.S. visitors, under those 12 categories, academics, people to people, etc., and just putting them on cruise ships instead of charter flights. But on the other hand, on another level, this really ups the ante, I think, because to the Cubans, it sort of brings that specter of that deluge of American tourists that they're sort of bracing for. Cruise ships just seem to symbolize that, I think, more than anything else.
Now, Mimi, this is not a huge ship that Carnival wants to take to Cuba. It's a 710-passenger ship, relatively small considering what we see here at Port Miami usually that go out to other places in the Caribbean that number in the thousands of passengers. Any clues to what these Cuban rules could be in order for Carnival to do business?
Well, there is a cruise terminal in Havana. There is a underwater automobile tunnel, so only a smaller cruise ship is going to get in there. There really aren't cruise facilities at other Cuban ports of call, so I guess you could sort of have a tender operation to get people on shore, but for the foreseeable future, really, you're only going to have these smaller cruise ships going
and
in.
And these are infrastructure challenges. What about the broader political and cultural challenges that that Carnival is on kind of the first wave of American companies to really attempt to engage? This isn't a small company by any stretch of the imagination. It's not a company that is not used to dealing with foreign governments. It operates globally. It has expanded considerably in China, for instance. So, you know, what lies ahead as it navigates these political and cultural waters with Cuba?
I think they must have a pretty good idea that the Cubans will approve it since they've gone public with it. There are also seven licenses that have been approved for ferry travel to Cuba. Again, the same sort of infrastructure challenges. All the ports that a ship leaving from the U.S. would go into have to be inspected by the U.S. Coast Guard. And as Tim said, we don't really know how much the Cuban government wants to embrace this at this point.
To that point, Tim, you know, we spoke to the Fathom president about the potential for capital investment, money that Carnival may have to invest in Cuba, partially for infrastructure reasons, partially for other reasons. You know, what do companies have to navigate when making those considerations, trying to get that Cuban business open? They know that the American demand is there, but they also know that the trade embargo is in place and other significant federal regulations here in the United States are in place.
They have to do what they really often don't have to do in most other countries, and that is find out what the guy at the very, very top is thinking, whether it's cruise lines, internet, any other kind of, you know, big business that you want to take into Cuba. The big challenge for all these investors is trying to find out, what is Raul thinking? What is Raul Castro eventually going to sign off on? Because really, in the end, that's all that matters.
Let's go to the phones here on the Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us at WLRN and find us on Facebook. In Miami, Amy is joining the conversation. Amy, go ahead. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually a regulatory attorney, and something that a lot of people don't talk about much is the risk of violating U.S.-based sanctions laws as well as the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, for example, in a country where the legal system is essentially governed, or rather controlled, by the government. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, as a regulatory attorney, how about some free advice for our corporate neighbor here in Doral for Carnival? What kind of advice from the outside, Amy, would you give them?
I mean, you know, I think...
Oh, you're breaking up on your cell phone, Amy. We'll try to tackle that here with our the lack of a law degree in the studio, at least with our international correspondents here. But Mimi, how about that? You know, the trade embargo is the one that soaks up a lot of attention, certainly. But the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, a number of companies that have operated in troubled areas in the world. I'm thinking specifically in some of the troubled places in Northern Africa and Central Africa have run up against this. These have to be considerations for companies as they look to try to open up into Cuba, aren't they?
Oh, there are many considerations, and any U.S. company that wants to venture into Cuba really should lawyer up and be fully aware of the restrictions for doing business in Cuba.
Is it a seller beware environment, Tim?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and also, look at what you're seeing on Capitol Hill right now. You've got this pushback from the more hardline Cuban-American caucus up there that's trying to put language into bills, for example, that doesn't let the Obama administration or businesses do this sort of investment if it in any way would involve military company-oriented mm-hmm. companies and personnel. And when you're talking about tourism in Cuba, for example, that tends to involve the military.
In terms of the military operations in Cuba,
they
operating.
Tend to be the managers of the tourism industry, and that's going to be a potential obstacle.
Florida's junior senator and Republican presidential candidate Senator Marco Rubio wrote in a New York Times opinion piece this week, quote, "Our extensive experience with transitions from communism has shown that economic opening and diplomatic engagement do not automatically lead to political freedom. Now, of course, that's been to some degree the effort the Obama administration began back in the middle of last December, Mimi. Is Carnival running a political risk here at home in the United States by taking this effort?
I don't think so, because we have had experience with these people-to-people trips since 2009. And even in prior administrations, there was sort of a flirtation with this type of travel. I think if you look at the polls, more and more Americans feel they should be able to travel to Cuba in some sense.
And more Americans are, in fact, traveling to Cuba. When you look at those numbers since December, they have really shot higher. And up until this point, at least, it's been on charter planes. Let's talk to Cindy in Fort Lauderdale. Cindy, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to share this with you. I was with my family in 1958. We were on the last cruise ship to leave Havana Harbor before Batista fell. It was a very exciting time.
What do you remember of that experience?
I remember it so vividly. We were a little hesitant to take the cruise because of the political unrest that we had heard about, but we were assured by the cruise line that all would be well. And we were in Havana for a couple of days, and we went to, it was exciting at my age then, at 13. We went to the nightclubs, Sans Souci and the Tropicana. We went out to see a cockfight, although the roosters were covered. We saw breadfruit, learned about that, and we saw the whole city of Havana.
Cindy, would you go back if Carnival is able to take a ship to Cuba?
Well, I always thought it would be fun to have been on the last cruise ship and on the first one. But I'm not sure I would be interested to go back. I've heard a lot about it, and it hasn't changed much with the old cars and all. It was the same way then.
Cindy, we appreciate you sharing your story with us here on the Florida Roundup. Much appreciated. I'll share this quick story. My mother spent her Christmas vacation of her high school senior year in Miami and in Havana, and she credits Havana for teaching her how not only to drink coffee, but also smoke a cigarette the right way. But that it goes back to another generation and another time, certainly. Talking about Cuba and the re-engagement that continues to evolve here between the United States and Cuba, and Carnival's public announcement this week came a day after reports surfaced of new reports of Cuban dissidents being detained, harassed, and in some cases attacked by government security agents. Now, the Fathom brand of Carnival Cruise, its president, Tara Russell, addressed the company's effort to do business with a country that the organization Human Rights Watch says, quote, continues to rely on arbitrary detention to harass and intimidate individuals who exercise their fundamental rights, end quote.
It's easy to dehumanize the country, right, and to not sort of look directly at the people, right? And so there's obviously a lot of question and debate about what's the right way to approach this new partnership and relationship with a new country. But, you know, again, for me, it comes back to the humans and to the Cuban people. And so, you know, when there is opposition to engagement in Cuba, that's really opposition to the Cuban people.
That's the response from Fathom President Tara Russell asking about engaging with Cuba, the country that continues to be the focus of a number of human rights concerns and violations. Tim, has the Cuban government been more or less harsh on dissidents since this re-engagement effort was launched back in December?
Well, technically, if you look at the figures, less so. I know there's been a contention on the part of people like Senator Rubio that since Obama announced the normalization project, that there has been an increase, or he claims that the situation has gotten worse with regards to dissident detentions, for example. But the figures don't bear that out. Compared to the first 6 months of last year, dissident detentions in Cuba is actually down. Now, but that doesn't mean that the detentions we're seeing, particularly this past weekend's incident with the punches being thrown by security personnel at one of the leading dissidents, is excusable at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not good to see this kind of thing. But technically, we have seen a reduction since Obama made his announcement in December.
And of course, one of the leading roles that was played as an intermediary between the United States and Cuba during the process leading up to the president's announcement in December about the effort to reestablish diplomatic relations was the Catholic Church. And the Pope this week in Latin America, kind of setting the stage for a Cuba visit in September. Mimi Whitefield, did we see any hints of what Pope Francis may engage with in Cuba during his trip to Ecuador and Bolivia, especially as it concerns human rights?
Well, we did see him apologize to indigenous people in Latin America for past abuses at the hands of the church. One of his major themes was attacking poverty. Certainly, that economic question, I think, will come up in Cuba. There was a pastoral message. The Latin or the Catholic Church is certainly losing influence all over Latin America, even though there are still 425 million Catholics. I think definitely in Cuba, he will be trying to strengthen, fortify the church. At one point during the revolution, religion was illegal, the right. practice of religion no longer true. Raul Castro has said he's going to be at all three of his masses. But the church is definitely in a rebuilding phase in Cuba. There hadn't been a new church built since the early days or before the revolution. Two are under construction now. So really trying to build the faith will be a major theme in Cuba.
We've seen some opinion polls come out of Cuba about the considered popularity of President Obama since his announcement in December. Have we seen anything corollary with the Catholic Church, given the role that the church played between President Obama and the Cuban leader Raul Castro leading up to the reestablishment of relations?
I think the Pope himself is hugely popular in Cuba, as he is all over Latin America. The Catholic Church, per se, has had some conflict, certainly with the government, but also with some of the dissidents.
Yeah. What, Tim, any hints on the kind of reception that he'll receive on the ground in Cuba beyond the official Castro regime reception?
But, oh, he'll receive an enormously popular greeting there. I mean, you know, as Mimi just points out, I mean, both Obama and Pope Francis in the last Amandi poll, for example, had higher popularity ratings than both the Castro brothers. And but there's a strange dynamic, though, that he's going to find going on in the, you know, as Mimi points out, the church is in a rebuilding phase. It has had, you know, some tussles with the government in that sense. But on the other hand, the church is really the only non-communist institution in Cuba that Raul Castro feels he can trust. And there has been some real tension between dissidents and, for example, the leader of the Catholic Church in Cuba, Cardinal Ortega, who recently made a sort of a bizarre comment that there are no political prisoners in Cuba. That really set off, the dissidents, and rightly so. So there's this strange balancing act that the church is trying to do in Cuba, and that's what the Pope is also going to be facing when he gets there.
And an odd balancing act happening in American politics this week with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. He continues his campaign of controversy. This week, almost doubling down, saying there's nothing to apologize for his earlier comments regarding Mexican immigrants, and predicting to NBC News this week that if he gets the Republican presidential nomination, he will, quote, win the Latino vote. Well, he's losing some business here in South Florida. NASCAR pulled out of a banquet at Trump Doral. Univision and NBC have ended their relationships with beauty pageants. The Miami mayor says he doesn't think that Trump should be welcome in the city. The county mayor returned a political contribution, and the county commission in Miami-Dade unanimously approved a resolution. And it's gotten so bad for Donald Trump in South Florida that even the Federal Aviation Administration removed Trump's name from navigational points for pilots near PBI, Palm Beach International Airport. Tim Padgett, what is happening here?
On Planet Earth or Planet Donald?
How about Planet Earth?
On Planet Earth, he could very well win the Republican nomination.
He's polling well in Iowa and New Hampshire.
With the way he's polling. But, I mean, as you said, he's doubling down, making comments like this week, and I quote, "Tremendous infectious disease is pouring across the border. The United States has become a dumping ground from Mexico for Mexico and, in fact, for many other parts of the world." Now, that is, if he were to get the nomination in the general election, this kind of thing would be poison, because he would reduce the Republican Party's share of the Hispanic vote to a point that there's just no way he could win the general election.
Mimi Whitefield, what does the reaction, though, that we've seen in South Florida, in political circles, business circles, and otherwise, tell us about our relationship with immigration, Mexican immigration or otherwise?
Well, if you would substitute Venezuelan or Cuban for Mexican, I think the response, you would probably have people marching in the streets.
Key to bar the door, yeah.
In Miami. Certainly there is a feeling that his words are extremely unfortunate. It could sway voters in the general election, especially if it's close. But I don't think you saw sort of the pushback from politicians that you would have had otherwise.
We have heard, though, from some political circles, probably Donald Trump is more closely aligned with Palm Beach County, but also with Doral because of the large resort there.
Well, but also this is a very important issue for Miami, because Doral is one of the most important immigrant cities in Florida. And, you know, earlier this year, Doral gave the key of the city to Donald Trump. But there was one lone congressperson or councilwoman, Christy Fraga, who rejected that idea. And she now thinks that that Doral should rescind that key.
This community is a great example of what Latinos and immigrants can do in our country. The first thing I would have done was asked for that key to be rescinded, because I don't think that someone who makes those type of comments we should be associated with or should have a key to our city. So I would hope that my colleagues would realize that and step up and say, you know what, this is the right thing to do.
And any chance that could happen?
I think so, because, you know, Luigi Borria, the mayor of Doral, I mean, he's been also very critical, and he made a very crucial point that, you know, even though the comments were directed at Mexicans, you know, other Hispanic groups like Venezuelans and Cubans need to be in solidarity with Mexicans. And I think if that sentiment, prevails, I think he could see Doral take the key away from Donald.
Tim Padgett covering the Americas as our Americas editor here at WLRN. Mimi Whitefield covering Latin America and the Caribbean for our partner, the Miami Herald. Great to see both of you. Thanks for your time and your thoughts here on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you.
We've got more to come here for you. Uber and Lyft will leave Broward County. Stay close. We're back on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Uber and Lyft plan on leaving Broward County at the end of this month. The two companies use technology allowing private citizens to act as taxi drivers, but without the exchange of a taxi medallion. And critics charge without all the safety regulations that come with the taxi industry. Supporters say Uber and Lyft, though, provide necessary competition for cab rides. Both companies say they're going to leave Broward because of what they call the county's onerous and hostile regulations. Those rules require drivers to register with the county, have background checks, check out their vehicles, and commercial insurance. Broward Mayor Tim Ryan says Uber follows those rules in other cities.
Uber is already complying with similar regulations in large markets in Houston, New York City, and in Columbus, Ohio. So it's difficult for me to understand why they would walk away from the Broward market.
Meantime, in Key West, the city that plays host to the annual Fantasy Fest Free For All says it will arrest Uber drivers. Is Uber throwing a temper tantrum like one of the Broward County commissioners complained this week? Are Broward's rules hostile to a competitor to the taxi industry? Are you a customer of Uber? How about a driver? Tell us your experiences. Join us on the telephone, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Send us a tweet at WLRN. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/WLRN. Media. Beam Furr is a Broward County Commissioner representing Hallandale, Hollywood, and Pembroke Pines. He joins us in studio. Commissioner, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Nan Klingen are covering the Keys at our southernmost bureau in Key West is joining us via Skype. Nan, welcome in. Always nice to hear from you.
Thanks, Tom.
And Brittany Wallman is a Broward County reporter for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel joining us on the telephone. Brittany, thanks for your time as well.
Hi, thank you.
Let's, Commissioner, start here. The County Commission approved regulations for transportation networks. This is what Uber and Lyft are considered under the regulations back in April. What are those regulations?
They are required to have fingerprint background checks. They have to have vehicle inspections, and they have to have insurance.
Those three inspections, and they also have to have an office in Broward County.
Correct.
Right. Now, you voted against the level two background checks, the fingerprinting background checks. Is that correct?
I did.
Why did you not support that kind of personal protection?
I thought that it may be going, well, they have a business model. And I think if you start to go with too much regulation, you're going to mess up that business model. I actually want to see them succeed. There's a lot of things to this new economy and sharing economy that I like to see. And I don't think you want to overregulate any of these, or you're going to lose some of the innovative aspects of it.
Is a level 2 fingerprint requirement background check going to make a company that has a potential value of $50 billion go bust like Uber?
I don't think it's the cost of it. I think it's the inconvenience of it, because they have a model where they're able to kind of do their background checks, and they do it on their own, their company. And then they have the thing about that Uber has, and Airbnb and a few others, they have monitoring tools that are interesting, that actually, if we're thinking about public safety, or if you're thinking of feedback, they, you know, as you know, the rider actually rates the driver, and the driver rates the passenger.
1 through 5 stars, 1 being poor, 5 right. being no problem at all.
Correct. Yeah. And that's pretty good monitoring. That's something that hasn't been done before.
You're willing to give the security monitoring up to the marketplace, essentially.
I'm considering that, yes.
Okay.
Because I think those new monitoring tools may be better than what we have.
Maybe better than police fingerprinting and background checks.
Not better than fingerprint in that case, but the day-to-day feedback that's given from passenger to driver and back and forth, that kind of instant feedback allows for people to say yay or nay, and that's, we don't get that on a regular basis.
One of the other requirements that Lyft and Uber have called onerous is the requirement that Broward County, your colleagues approved in April, vehicles inspected by a licensed mechanic. You also voted against that.
No, I voted for that.
You voted for that. I apologize. I have bad information.
That was actually something that I think Uber and Lyft have both, they're fine with that.
Does the county ordinance regulate prices?
It does not. We were trying to very narrowly focus our regulation. And so we actually allowed them, we didn't regulate their price. We didn't regulate how many cars they could have, which is very different from our regulations with the taxi industry.
Well, you regulate price and the number of cars via the medallions.
Correct.
Why the different price regulations for a transportation network compared to the taxi cab network?
I think we were just trying to say, we recognize that it's an interesting business model, and we were going to let the marketplace work the way it would.
Meantime, Uber and Lyft have both said, enough with your regulations, Broward right. County. We're leaving, Commissioner. Right. Brittany Wallman with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. What has been the fast reaction among Uber clients in Broward County?
Well, they have an incredible amount of goodwill and positive vibes out there and trust. And the response has been overwhelmingly defending Uber and blasting the county commission. And people really aren't interested in the details of what the county commission did. What they're interested in is they want Uber, and I guess some people want Lyft also. And they want the county commission to do whatever they can to bring it back.
We're getting reaction on social media. Scott Axelrod 579, a very progressive county just hit the skids. Literally, this is not the first or last industry to evolve. J.S. Ramos 04, it bothers me that my county is trying to tell me how to spend my transportation money. We've got Solar Man JD. I want to bring renewable energy to the island. All of this talking about regulation and the trap between free market enterprise and the county commission's responsibility to protect its citizenry. How does the commission try to navigate this water if transportation networks like Uber and Lyft pull out? Are they gone for good?
I first of all, I don't think they're gone for good, or they wouldn't be asking all of their riders to petition us, because they have a very healthy petition drive going on right now.
Yeah, Brittany's laughing at that. You've, yes. you've heard about this, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What does the commissioner mean by healthy?
My life over, personally.
Brittany Wallman with the South Florida Sun Sentinel defined healthy as the commissioner talks about a healthy petition campaign.
What I've seen is they've got like 70,000 people have signed this online petition, and I know that the commissioner probably hasn't even made it through his inbox in the
That's a lot of lobbyists.
Let me go to our southernmost reporter, Nan Klinginer, in Key West. Well, we haven't seen the kind of reaction in Key West. Key West hasn't kicked out Uber. They haven't welcomed Uber at all. They've said they're going to arrest drivers. What's the situation there?
Yeah, as far as the city of Key West is concerned, Uber and its drivers are violating the city's vehicle for hire ordinance, which limits the number of taxi licenses. So as far as they're concerned, if you're driving an Uber car, you're violating that ordinance, and it could be a second-degree misdemeanor.
I have to ask, Nan, this strikes me as almost contrary to this live and let live image of Key West.
Well, the live and let live image definitely applies to personal behavior, but it doesn't necessarily apply to the tourism industry. They've gotten into some legal battles about franchises for tour trains and trolleys, and you know, they've taken Airbnb to the code enforcement department. So they're very protective of the existing businesses here.
From the southernmost area up to Broward County, we've got plenty of phone calls here, Nan and Brittany and Commissioner. Let's go to the phones and bring in Oscar from Miami-Dade County. Go ahead, Oscar, your comments.
It's been life-changing for us, Uber. We have a family member who does our babysitting. She doesn't drive. We had to rely on taxis to get her to our house and back. And the taxi service was horrible. They were unreliable. They never got there. Sometimes they would take 20 minutes. The dispatcher never lets you know, we're sorry, the guy's running late, or it was just a disaster. So Uber has been sort of life-changing for us. The reliability of the service is something that I don't think it's discussed enough. I mean, the fact is that taxi services are terrible.
Reliability, a big plus for you, Oscar, in Miami with Uber. Let's go to Mary Beth in Fort Lauderdale. Welcome to the Florida Roundup, Mary Beth. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Mary Beth Chofiu, and I am a avid user of Uber and Lyft. And prior to their services, I did utilize the taxis, but I stopped because I actually felt unsafe. Half these people didn't speak English. I never knew when they were going to pick me up. Actually, one guy told me to get out of his cab, taking me to a dance club in the late evening. And this is now a regulated taxi driver. Just recently, I had left my iPhone in a Uber driver's car. I had his picture. I had his car. I knew his address. I could follow his route. I just felt so safe. I had feedback from other people. I would never take a taxi in this area ever. So if Uber and Lyft goes out of here, then I don't have another option right now. I think that somebody will start another system because it is a free market society, and I don't know why you're stopping people from doing business.
Mary Beth, we got the comments there. Commissioner, reliability a concern for Oscar, safety a concern for Mary Beth. Are you using your experiences at all in Broward County and your engagement with Uber and Lyft to address some of the deficiencies that the market clearly sees in the regulated, highly regulated taxicab industry?
Well, I think it's making the taxi industry itself raise its game, because a lot of the innovations that Uber and Lyft have brought to the market, particularly much like what she was just saying there, was people know when it's coming. They know they can watch it coming to them. They know what it's going to cost. These are good innovations, and people like it. The other part is what I've seen and heard, because we took an enormous amount of testimony, is people seem to actually, there's a connection made between the drivers and the passengers, that they're actually having kind of a shared experience that I don't know is necessarily having in the in uh, in the taxi industry.
At least in Mary Beth's case, a shared experience that was not positive in regard to the cab driver
but
that she spoke about
on
there.
The other hand.
But positive on the other hand, right. Let's go to line two. Chris Bridger is along with us from Key West. Chris, you are an attorney in Key West representing the Uber driver that's been arrested by the city. Where does the case stand?
As of right now, I just came on to the case. There was some dissatisfaction with the other attorney, but I don't want to dilute the issue that way. Right now, we're in negotiations with the city, trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to treat these drivers who've been cited, whether the cases will ultimately be dismissed or, you know, they'll just have to do some kind of probation or, you know, ultimately even jail time. We're still working that out with the city of Key West at this point in time.
Nan Klingener, our Southernmost reporter, I mean, this is potentially a criminal case here. How many instances of Uber drivers arrested in Key West do we know about?
Well, we know that they did an undercover operation back in December, and they cited four drivers, one of whom is Mr. Bridger's client. Since they announced this new crackdown starting July 1st, they have not arrested any.
Chris Bridger, an attorney representing one of the Key West Uber drivers who's been arrested. Mr. Bridger, any conversations with prosecutors about a plea?
I've been in discussions with one of the assistant city attorneys. At this point, they are looking for, you know, at least a withhold, which is a, you know, finalization of the case on my client's record. You know, no jail has been discussed at this point in time, but they are pursuing, you know, a criminal avenue to resolve the case.
What is the charge, Chris?
The charge is, it's a violation of a municipal ordinance. It's two charges, violation of the passenger for not having a passenger vehicle for hire license, and then holding himself out as having that license while running a passenger vehicle for hire.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing here is, you know, to go on some of the commissioner's comments from Broward, at least Broward is recognizing this type of business and regulating it. In Key West, you know, Uber is treated as a taxi cab where they can't get those licenses. There are no medallions available for cab drivers. There are no limousines or contract vehicle for hire licenses available. You know, Key West is effectively shut off from
any
new drivers.
And by not available, what you're saying is there's a limited number of those licenses available. They're all occupied and none of them are for sale in the market.
Yes, sir. Right. There are just under 60 available, and they're held effectively by two taxi companies.
The way I understand it, there's 56 cab licenses in the city of Key West. Let me bring that back to our Broward County Commissioner Beam. For you hear from the attorney there in Key West, in Monroe County and Dade County, these companies cannot operate legally.
Correct.
Period. In Broward County, they could if they follow the rules that are currently the statute in Broward County.
In fact, what's interesting is we actually had two transportation network companies that we'd never heard of just did become part of Broward County.
Which two are those?
It's called Rapid and...
they're similar transportation network companies
that with 10 cars or less.
10 cars or less.
Yeah. So
is that a different regulation, regulatory?
Well, there's a tiered of how much it costs each one of them to get their license. For Uber, it's a lot of money. For these guys, it's not as much. But we're trying to, we've kind of stuck our neck out in trying to create a regulatory framework that will work for them. We're not trying to keep them out. We're actually trying to actively work with them.
Brittany Wallman with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. It sounds like the commissioner is trying to say Broward County is open for business, open for innovation with these kind of legacy industries, highly regulated industries, where the message in Monroe County, certainly from Key West and Dade County, has been much different.
Yeah, I think that message has been lost on the public at large because of this announcement of a withdrawal. But what Broward did actually is progressive in that there are only three communities in this entire state that have recognized Uber and Lyft as something different than a taxi and essentially legalized them. And it's just important to Uber to get the ordinance perfect, I think, so that it could be used as a model in Miami-Dade and Palm.
A perfect ordinance. Is there such a thing, Commissioner? A perfect ordinance?
Good luck on that.
Yeah.
It's always a work in progress.
Brittany, you mentioned just a few cities in Florida that have allowed these to happen. Clearly, Key West is not one of those, Nan Klingener. Tallahassee, I believe, Brittany, correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner Nan, I think Tallahassee, the capital city, has actually
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday of this week, right.
And they're the only one that got the gold star from Uber, though.
Right.
What are the differences?
The ordinance they like.
What are the differences, Commissioner, between what your folks did in April and you did in April and what Tallahassee did on Wednesday?
It really almost comes down to one thing, and it comes down to in Tallahassee, they're going to allow Uber to do the background checks as opposed to We were wanting to kind of control that part.
Is there a catch in that? In other words, is there a moment that you will trust but verify?
I think that's where we need to look at. We need to find out if they're willing to share data, because we need to know who's coming into our regulated areas. And by regulated areas, I mean our airport, our seaport, because those are, you have to have a permission to get in on the seaport.
Those are national security issues
correct,
in some cases.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's some real reasons to have, when I ask people, do you want the person who's picking you up to have a background check? They say, yeah. Do you want them to have insurance? They say, yeah.
You want a safe car?
You want a safe car? They say, yeah. I said, okay, that's all we're trying to do. And
does that mean you'd vote for background checks then at this point? Or you'd continue to vote against level two checks?
I'm still against level two, only because I think it's more onerous and it's working against that business model.
Clearly, a lot of support has been voiced here for these transportation network companies, Uber and Lyft. Ram is going to give us a bit of a dissenting view, I think, from Hollywood. Ram, go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing? I've been a taxi driver, then I work very hard to earn my medallion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Uber is coming in is only an application company. To their own surprise, Uber wanted just like to get people as a group, right? Not for hire. If four old ladies want to go play some bingo somewhere, they will share a ride, or four students want to go to a basketball game. But in Uber, in an internal memo, it said that it's so easy to bribe politicians, and it was so easy because the taxi driver wasn't organized. Now, the reason is with Uber, there is, in many countries, wherever they go, there is chaos. Last week in Paris, there was a war by mm-hmm. Orly Airport. Paris was burning. The president of France issued an order to cease Uber from operating right there. Wherever
Ram, let me ask you a question to bring it home to your business. Have you been impacted? Yeah. Have you seen fewer passengers?
Absolutely. You know what? You wait 4 hours at the airport, and you get a lousy $10 job. If you work minimum at $10 an hour for 5 hours, that's $50, and you get $10.
Ram, do you own your medallion? Do you have your taxi medallion? Do you own it?
Yes, I do.
You do. What's the value of that medallion? How's that changed?
The medallion drop right now in Dade County is like $150,000, drop like in half.
And what did you pay for it? What did you pay for yours?
Yeah, well, I paid for it about $225,000. There was the housing crisis. I end up selling my house so I can have a job, and whatever left from the housing crisis to buy a medallion, and then this come down. Now,
Ram,
let me just talk for a second. Why the commissioner didn't say to a rich company like Uber, you want to come in, you want to be for hire? We have a for hire rule. If you're coming on with this magic innovation, so why don't you show us, buy 100 medallion or 200 medallion?
Ram, we understand that. Gotcha. I'll put it to the commissioner. Any thoughts on expanding the number of medallions in Broward County?
I think what you're going to see is probably an opening up of that. If we're opening it up, you want to try to be as fair as you can.
By opening up, you mean additional medallions,
correct.
Regulated taxi medallions.
Correct. I think the next phase of this is trying to make sure that those people that have been part of our industry can progress just as well. And if it means opening up more medallions, because it's right now it's simply tied to population. That's arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
And, if there's room for more, there's a difference in cost in Broward and Dade on the medallion, though.
Well, sure.
In Broward, it's only $1,000.
The medallion itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a customer of Uber or Lyft, Commissioner?
I actually got their app, and the one time I tried to use it, they couldn't find me.
Was the location services turned on your phone, Commissioner?
Something wasn't on right, and I talked to him later. I said, I know I probably... It was
so you have not officially been a paying customer of any of these transportation network companies?
I have not, but my brother and my daughter and many friends have. So they are constantly hounding me.
Commissioner, we appreciate your time today. Commissioner Beam Furr along with us from Broward County. We want to give our thanks as well to the South Florida Sun Sentinel, County Reporter Brittany Wallman joining us over the telephone, and from our Southernmost Bureau in Key West, Nan Klinginer. Thanks to both of you, all three of you, for your contributions here on the Florida Roundup. Got a little bit more to come here. The High Court in Florida wants the state's congressional districts to be redrawn. That's next.
We're back here on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. So late this week, Florida's Supreme Court ordered an erasure to be taken to several of Florida's U.S. congressional districts. At least five here in South Florida will be affected. The court said the current district map was unconstitutional, has to be redrawn, and it wants a new map within 100 days. One of the districts that will be redrawn is the southernmost district in South Dade and Monroe counties. Republican Congressman Carlos Corbello won that seat just last fall.
This is a decision for the Florida legislature to make, so I'm just focused on doing my work here and making sure I represent the people of South Florida the way they deserve.
Meantime, Florida U.S. Senator Bill Nelson says the high court here in the Sunshine State made the right decision.
Well, thank goodness. That's clearly what the people voted in their Florida Constitution years ago.
This was a constitutional amendment several years ago here in the Sunshine State. Brendan Farrington covers Tallahassee for the Associated Press with us from the Capital City, and Patty Mazzei covering politics for the Miami Herald. Patty, the five districts affected here in South Florida, two held by Democrats in Palm Beach and Broward counties, three GOP seats here in Dade County. What are they and what could be the impact of this redraw?
Ones in Broward and Palm Beach are held by Representative Lois Frankel of West Palm and Representative Ted Deutsch of Boca. And what the court said was wrong in those districts is that they are vertically aligned with each other in Broward and Palm Beach and that they should be horizontally stacked on each other. This is an area that is very Democratic, so perhaps there's a possibility that the two of them or that another Democrat, Alcee Hastings of Miramar, could end up in the same seat under a new map. But it's not a place where Republicans expect to make many gains, even with a new map.
Meantime, in Dade County, it is the Republicans. It's Mario Diaz-Balart, it's Corbello, as we mentioned, and Ileana Ross-Layton.
Correct. And there is a problem there in the city of Homestead, where the court said that voters were split up kind of to divide Democrats that should have been held together. And there is another issue for Mario Diaz-Balart in Hendry County, which is in southwest Florida, again, where the county should have been kept together and not divided. So Corbello, who is already in a very competitive seat, could find a tougher re-election if they put a bunch of Democrats there. But it is a small enough portion of the district that it's, you know, not very clear yet how it will play out.
So we're fully aware that those of us who are geographically challenged, talking about maps on the radio can be difficult. We've got a link to the district map on our website at WLRN.org. Brendan Farrington, Tallahassee correspondent with the AP. We talk about these five districts in South Florida. I think it's eight districts technically that the high court identified, but it's eight out of 27. Odds are there's a domino effect here, right, Brendan?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, as the Supreme Court noted, that districts that border these eight will probably have to be changed too. You know, when I looked at the maps yesterday, you know, there are 14 districts that border these eight, so you have potentially 22. And not only that, but you look at Corinne Brown's district, which goes from Jacksonville to Orlando, that they suggested instead of a north-south, maybe it should go east-west. Well, how far west? Does it go to Tallahassee? Does it go to District 2?
And that seems to have been the strategy, Patty, as you mentioned, in Palm Beach and Broward. They talked about this horizontal stacking. I mean, was, Brendan, in your estimation, the court giving guidance to this effort that it is now requiring to redraw the maps?
Sure, the court was given guidance, but you got to remember the legislature is a separate body. The Republican-led legislature hasn't always gotten along with the Supreme Court. So, you know, while they'll look at that guidance, they're still going to, you know, do what they're going to do. And as the court noted, this has always been a politically driven process.
And as recent experience has shown, the Republican legislature hasn't always gotten along with itself, as we just went through the session and the special session. Patty Mazzei, I mean, what drives the effort now to redraw these maps with this 100-day deadline ticking away?
Well, assuming that there is not another challenge here in court that further delays this, they would have to call another special session. And like Brendan said, it's a political process. The party in power gets to redraw the districts, and Florida does have this constitutional amendment that is now kind of throwing a wrench in the plans. But, you know, just because the court wants things a certain way doesn't mean the legislature is going to do it exactly like the court wants. I think they will do the bare minimum to pass muster.
In that regard, Brendan, what with the new process is going to be different than the old process that led to this court challenge and the Supreme Court saying, no, these districts are gerrymandered and illegal, unconstitutional.
Well, I mean, another thing the court noted was that a lot of the major decisions were made behind closed doors, and they're recommending that that not happen this time. So it'll be interesting to see just, you know, whether the legislature takes that to heart or whether they, you know, decide things behind closed doors, but then publicly state what they're doing.
Do we have a special session then coming up in the weeks ahead?
We will.
Yeah.
When that is and how that proceeds is to be determined.
The ink wasn't even dry in the last special session, and here we go again. Brendan Farrington covering Tallahassee and the state capitol for the Associated Press. Patty Mazze covering politics all over Florida and elsewhere for our partner, the Miami Herald. Thanks to both of you joining us here on the Florida Roundup. That is our program today. Keep that conversation going on Twitter. Use the hashtag Florida Roundup. Are you an Uber customer? What are you going to do after July 31st in Broward if they pull out as threatened? Florida Roundup is produced by Alicia Zuckerman and Julia Duba. Our digital editor is Maria Muriel. Technical supervisor today is Paul Leary. South Florida Arts Beat with Ed Bell is next. It is live from Studio A. Stick around for that. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.